Hey guys, we're going to get to your Extreme Rules preview and prediction show with co-host Zach Smith. You guys know him as the NXT review host here on the unofficial WWE podcast. So we jump through all of what's going on in Extreme Rules with our thoughts, our opinions, could there be a big return, and how these outcomes are going to lead into SummerSlam in about 5 weeks. So let's get it all rolling right now.
Welcome to the WWE podcast. The most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? 'Cause Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Saturday, July 18th, 2020. And we're about to dive into Extreme Rules, the horror show at Extreme Rules, or the horror show at Extreme Rules, or Extreme Rules, the horror show. Take your pick, because I don't even think WWE knows what their own pay-per-view is called. But nonetheless, Zach Smith and I dive into Extreme Rules. We give our thoughts and predictions as SummerSlam looms just around the corner, and we really use SummerSlam as a guiding star for some of our outcomes of our matches. So we really got into a lot of detail here, which I know you guys like, and we do too. So Zach Smith, again, he's the NXT host for our unofficial WWE podcast, and his show drops every single Thursday. So check him out if you haven't. Just go back on the feed and give him a listen. I think you'll enjoy. I've got nothing but great feedback from his show. So very appreciative for him contributing to this to the WWE, unofficial WWE podcast. And I think if you love NXT, you will love his show. So again, it drops every single Thursday right here on this feed. So here we go. We're going to get into Extreme Rules. Before I do, everybody, just so you know, I'm on Instagram at WWE_podcast. I also have a group on Facebook. It's the only thing living for me on Facebook is the group, the WWE podcast. Literally, that's it. Facebook has blackballed me. Your guess is as good as mine. And on Twitter is still gone. So Instagram is the best way to get a hold of me at WWE_podcast. I'm still alive there. It's like my ninth life. And hopefully I'm not on the final life of my social media influence or social media platforms. So we'll have to see. But nonetheless, tomorrow, I wish I could say I'll be live tweeting during the show. That's not an option anymore. But I will be on Instagram. So here's the deal. If you guys would like to see me on Instagram live, right? You want to see Instagram, like an IGTV or something like that, let me know, right? If you want to have a live stream during the pay-per-view to see my live reactions and so forth, I'm fine with that. Or if you just want me to kind of post things during the show, I mean, I can always do that as well. Let me know what you think. Let me know your opinions, or maybe just a normal show, right? I will be doing a post show for the pay-per-view, which will be held on Monday. Normally, I don't do Monday shows, but given the pay-per-view is happening tomorrow night, I will be doing a post-show review with Michael Gross, who will be joining me Monday evening. Tuesday will be your Raw review, and then Wednesday, of course, is your Wrestling Nostalgia, and you guys know the rest of the schedule. I mean, we've got like seven shows coming your way this week. So with all that being said, let's get to a question that I got from a listener, and then we'll dive into the Extreme Rules preview and prediction. But I always say, you guys got questions or comments, here's one of them. Just email me at realwwepodcast@gmail.com with your voicemail, and here's one of them right now.
Hey Matt, this is Christian. I've been listening for a while, and I wanted to send in an audio question for you, because I know you said you love those. My question is kind of a unique one. I want you to fantasy book Keith Lee's first WrestleMania match in feud. And I hear from a lot of other places when it comes to fantasy booking, oh, just have them destroy everybody. Just have them go through the roster. Have them win, win, win. And I think that's very one-dimensional. So I'd like, if you can, to think of a really, really nice feud and match and what kind of stipulation, stuff like that, and just have some fun with it. And I know we don't really hear much about you and NXT, so that would be kind of refreshing too. Thank you.
Hey, Christian. So thanks for the question. And I do love the voicemails. They're a lot of fun to answer. And obviously for listeners, you get to hear new voices. So yeah, I don't talk a lot about NXT. As you know, I just don't have time to watch it. Simply, I review or look at the reviews and I see highlights. So here's what I'm going to say. And again, somebody may have a differing opinion for somebody that just watches every single move, every single match, every single moment. But here's what I would do with Keith Lee. I would, as far as WrestleMania, I can't give you from now until WrestleMania, given that there's so much in between that I really just haven't had the time to just dive through every pay-per-view and how I do it. But here's the ultimate destination that I would get to. With Keith Lee, this guy has so much to give to the business still. This guy is, I think, a future main eventer on the, quote, main roster. But here's what I would do with WrestleMania. I would have his opponent be Kevin Owens. Now, I know Kevin Owens is not on and not on NXT right now. He's on Raw. I get it. But Kevin Owens, I think, could be built up, if he's brought back to NXT, could be built up as a hell of an opponent for him. I'm not saying Kevin Owens has to go heel. I'm not saying that. I know Keith Lee is a big babyface there, but I'm not saying it has to be heel versus babyface. That's the brilliance of this. I think Kevin Owens should come in and just go on kind of parallel paths with Keith Lee. Not have them even just lock eyes until maybe the Royal Rumble time. And that's where you start to build this program, around the Royal Rumble. And have Kevin Owens just be booked extremely strong in NXT. As you said, I know that many people say, oh, you just run through the roster, but there's really no there's no good path for running through the entire roster with just no resistance, because where do you go, right? How do you feel like your babyface, your hero, your the person you're living vicariously through has any kind of struggle, right? If they're just constantly steamrolling, that's not relatable. That's not long-term sustainable, right? There's no sustainability in that type of story that you mentioned of just steamrolling and steamrolling and steamrolling. Eventually, there has to be some kind of adversity, some kind of struggle. So Kevin Owens, I think, should be booked extremely strong on a parallel path with Keith Lee, but not intersecting. And then you get to WrestleMania and have these two face one another. Kevin Owens has been extremely vocal about wanting to go back to NXT. He's been very vocal about wanting to go back to NXT because he thinks he could help build a brand even better, even higher. I also think it suits his wrestling style a little bit more. While NXT feels like kind of like an indie promotion within WWE, it's still the WWE system. So I think it would be a great refresh for Kevin Owens' career and for Keith Lee to have an opponent that he could really work well off of, and these two could go at it. Now, I know Keith Lee is obviously a bigger man than Kevin Owens, but Kevin Owens is still a pretty big dude. And you could have, I think, a great program. The promos would be really good between one another. So Kevin Owens versus Keith Lee. That's how I would go to WrestleMania. But we'll have to see. I don't think it's likely. But if they bring Kevin Owens back to NXT, which I think would be a really good thing, then there's a distinct possibility of that, if not at WrestleMania, another pay-per-view. And one more email I got, and it's not really a question, but I have to give a shout-out to DJ Kuzmo, who is one of the biggest listeners of our show. And I responded to a wrestling nostalgia I did last week with my top five moments of the Ruthless Aggression era. His five moments, which maybe kind of makes you guys think, what are your five moments? I'd love to hear. Number five, his was Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit celebrating their title wins at WrestleMania 20. Number four, Undertaker returning. Number three, Eric Bischoff awarding the World Heavyweight title to Triple H. Number two, Brock Lesnar versus The Rock at SummerSlam 2002 for the WWE title. And number one, Brock Lesnar's WWE debut. I mean, I can't disagree with any of that, especially The Rock and Brock Lesnar. I think that match is really, really one of the biggest turning points in WWE history, right? When you look at the passing of the torch, so to speak. So, great list. Alrighty, let's get to it. Let's get to your preview and predictions with Zach Smith for tomorrow night's Extreme Rules pay-per-view. Guys, again, I'll be back Monday with your full review for Extreme Rules with Michael Gross, so stay tuned for that. It's destined to be a two-hour-plus show if you love long-form audio, so hit me up at realwwepodcast@gmail.com or on Instagram at @WWE_podcast for my real-time review and thoughts about things going on for the pay-per-view tomorrow night. So until then, guys, talk to you soon. All right, guys, welcome to the official Extreme Rules. Oh, wait a minute. Let me say this the right way. The horror show at Extreme Rules, although the name has changed about three times with WWE, it is the horror show at Extreme Rules, and it's the preview and prediction. I've got Zach Smith. You guys know him as the NXT review host. Zach, it's great to have you on the show to connect and talk about Extreme Rules.
Matt, it is great to be back. I was looking forward to it. As you said, I do host the NXT show every week. Usually comes out on Thursdays. But I'm excited to talk about Extreme Rules and now Extreme Rules Horror Show, a show that seems like it's named after just one match and one of those shows where if it's bad, you're shooting yourself in the foot because all the headlines are going to say it was a horror show. So I'm excited to talk about it.
Yeah, they are truly rolling the dice that it's not going to be a horror show in the way that some fans may view it as just an awful pay-per-view. Funny, I didn't even think of that, so that's pretty good. So I guess before we get into Extreme Rules, as a kind of a high-level overview, how are you enjoying this COVID-era WWE product? I mean, over the last few weeks, are you feeling like things are starting to come back to normal? Is it kind of business as usual? How do you feel about the product and the storylines in this COVID era so far?
It's interesting because since I started hosting the NXT show, I've had to kind of watch it more closely than I normally would as a fan and take notes about different things. And I think the biggest thing for me is it definitely still feels like Raw and SmackDown and NXT and Main Event and 205 Live and all pay-per-views, you can definitely tell that they're happening in the Performance Center because not so much just because it's in the Performance Center, but because WWE hasn't really dressed up sets to look different from one than the other. There's just a red light for Raw, blue light for SmackDown, yellow light for NXT. So it's definitely been a huge adjustment, and I definitely am still always aware that there is not a live crowd there. However, I do really like that WWE finally took the cue from AEW and had fans in attendance, or rather Performance Center athletes in attendance, because while you're definitely not getting a true fan reaction, you're getting the reaction that they want you to have. There's just something that sets off in your head when you look out and there are fans there and you can hear people reacting to things that makes it feel like wrestling. So it definitely doesn't feel like business as usual, and I definitely can't wait for fans to be able to get back. But, I mean, WWE can't even properly test their own employees, so I don't trust that. But it's definitely helped that they have the Performance Center people there so that it at least feels like a crowd.
Right. I mean, given the alternative that we saw for many, many, many weeks, this was certainly a welcome change. And yes, there are, 20 people in the audience spaced apart. They're not the true fan, yes, and they are the NXT trainees. And so they're just going to give the reaction to WWE that WWE wants the crowd to react to. And it's funny that all these, you know, these controlled audiences and all of the pre-taped cinematic matches are really WWE's dream to be able to really control the what they want the audience to sound like. It's funny they're being able to really live their fantasy of this is how the crowd should react, damn it. And so, again, I would rather have 20 people in the audience that are NXT trainees that are really just WWE robots, basically, to cheer for the baby faces, boo the heels, and that's fine. I'd rather have that, and it certainly helps the presentation. But as you said, I am dying to get in front of a live audience to make the soul come back into wrestling. I've mentioned this. This is the best analogy I can and really come up with is, man, the soul has just been pulled out of wrestling, and it's really difficult. And I know a Major League Baseball is coming back in a week. I think the NFL is on track for a normal opening. But the problem is, fans. I don't think fans are going to be in attendance, right? So it's hard when you don't have the most important part of the whole presentation of a reaction, the soul, the emotion of that sport there. So, yeah, I can't wait. I don't know. Do you have any suspicion of when they could possibly come back into even a partial capacity arena format for a live, real WWE fans?
Interesting, because it feels like it's going to be a while now. I know that they were on track to do something to that effect. They WWE mysteriously were able to continue to run shows as an essential business, and it felt like we were heading toward being open at a smaller capacity. And I feel like it ruined it when WWE had however many people they had test positive, because it turns out all that they were doing was checking their temperatures and not having them wear masks. And so it definitely feels like that, if you're WWE and you're going to go back and try and say, we're ready to have people come in at 50% capacity, it doesn't seem like you are ready at all. So it always felt like they were going to try and have a live crowd, at least in some degree, by SummerSlam. And we're at a pay-per-view just about before SummerSlam, and it definitely doesn't seem like any fans are going to be able to be in attendance when they just got their testing policy kind of the way it should have been the whole time. So it feels like originally we were heading for SummerSlam for that, and that's what I thought. I thought that they were doing everything they could do, and they were just going to have fans when they had them. But it definitely feels like that's been delayed by everything that's happened in just the past few weeks.
Yeah, I don't think that you're going to see WWE go to Boston this week, which is where it was supposed to be held. Certainly not. And I miss it as much as anybody else. I'm sure the performers, honestly, maybe miss it more than the fans, because that's how they build their characters. They are just hardwired to get a reaction from an audience. And when they don't have an audience, it can be uncomfortable for them. It's certainly sometimes uncomfortable to watch at home, particularly more in the first couple of months. I think now the performers are starting to acclimate to the environment of at least now a very, very, very small amount of people in the audience, but still nonetheless. I really hope that by maybe, and again, this is all just speculation, that before the end of the year, before the ball drops in Times Square on New Year's Eve, do we have fans in an arena? If I was to be a betting man, I would say probably in a limited capacity will you see, at least in 2020 sometime, as we all can't wait to get rid of this year. It'll be the most celebrated ball drop in the history of ball drops this year. But I think probably by the end of the year, more likely I would say a target time is WrestleMania and or towards a Royal Rumble / WrestleMania season is probably a more likely scenario, as again, until there's a vaccine, I don't know how this thing is ever just going to go away until people are vaccinated and there's a mass amount of vaccination available, because this thing is just going to keep circulating and going in cycles of, oh, it's going down and then there's a spike and going down until, honestly, either everyone gets it and develops an immunity to it or there's a vaccine. I really don't know how they're going to come back in a full live event with no masks, no social distancing, and back to business as usual.
Doesn't really seem like it's going to be a thing that's possible to do. It doesn't seem like you would have enough fans that want to risk their lives, and it doesn't seem like you're going to be able to convince everybody that you can open it at 50% quickly enough. It definitely seems like, at least by Royal Rumble, you would have to think that they want fans there for that, because the Royal Rumble is a high percentage of it is based on the crowd reaction. That's why Drew McIntyre feels like a big deal right now, because the crowd went crazy when he won the Royal Rumble and kicked Brock Lesnar out. The Royal Rumble is one of those pay-per-views that I don't think would work as a cinematic match. I think it would take away a lot from the format they already have. So they definitely are going to want it by Royal Rumble. You can get an Extreme Rules show. You could definitely do that without a crowd. There's nothing that's based on crowd reaction, but WrestleMania and Royal Rumble are their two shows that if you were going to have a crowd for two, you need it for those two. And so if WWE can get a crowd in, then they're going to want to do it at least by the Royal Rumble. So I would think that by the end of the year, they're going to at least have thought of something to get some fans back. I don't think we're going to have 100% for a long, long time, but at least get 25 or 50% of fans in there. And it definitely feels like they want to have this done before 2021 hits.
I think that's a good goal, and I think that fans are scratching at the, you know, the itch here to really want to get back in WWE as well. I'm sure, you know, although Roman Reigns is on a, you know, 4-month vacation now, you know, you wonder what some of these guys are doing. But I guess here's my question. I mean, a lot of wishful thinking around this coronavirus, so much uncertainty. I've heard a lot of fans complain about the format. I personally am taking the bar down for WWE's expectations of what I want from them. I'm purposefully kind of reducing my expectations, and I want to, because I don't want WWE to give me their best foot forward right now. It's weird to say, and I said this in a previous show, I want them to kind of give me I don't want to say dumbed down, but kind of like a plan B. I don't want them to pull out all their aces out and lay all their cards on the table with no crowd there. I don't want big heel turns, really. I don't want big surprise returns, none of that. I mean, think about when Stone Cold, he was the very first Monday Night Raw in front of nobody. You know, that was, oh, God, he couldn't have just waited one more week. And right. So, but my point is, again, that if you don't have fans, it hurts, and I don't know. I think WWE right now is getting a pass on a lot of stuff, and I expect WWE to kind of give me their plan B. So people's expectations for them, really, to WWE to just be normal WWE, should really kind of modify their expectations, because why would you want to see big returns, big angles, big storylines when it's really in front of nobody? I would just do the best to tread water, give a little bit, you know, make it feel like you're progressing storylines, but pull back a little. Don't show your best hand. Do you feel that way too, or am I just like maybe doing something that most fans probably aren't? I don't know.
I think that I agree with you that I definitely don't want to see big returns. I mean, Edge's return was kind of muddled a bit by the fact that after his first match, crowds were just gone like that. So I'm glad he got the moment at the Royal Rumble. So I do agree with you that my expectations are tempered a bit, because there is no crowd. WWE has always and will always play to a crowd, whether it's for faces or heels or big returns or big moments. I don't want to see Stone Cold coming back in front of nobody. I don't want to see the biggest match ever in front of nobody. I definitely want to see it in front of a crowd. Although I don't know if my expectations overall have gone down. My expectations for being surprised and having older guys come back has definitely gone down. But on the other hand, I do feel like the WWE and Vince and Kevin Dunn has always had an air about them that they know best, and they're into production, and they're into their product looking and sounding better than any other product. That's part of the reason Vince took over as much as he did so quickly, because his was just more polished. And so now WWE has this sandbox that they get to play in all by themselves. And so my expectations for cinematic matches, or my expectations for the presentation itself once I'm watching it on television, have stayed the same or have gone up, because now your shows aren't live. You have time to tape them and edit them, and you have a lot of time to prepare. And you also get to do whatever you want, because your crowd is performance center. They're going to react however you tell them. So my expectation for big moments has definitely diminished. My expectation for everything looking, sounding, and feeling bigger in terms of production has gone up, because you've talked about this over and over. Vince always says, we make movies, even though they don't make good ones. And this is the moment to show that, and to show that you can do things differently. I think they proved that a bit at WrestleMania. I think they've proved it since to a degree, but I want to see that part get better.
I think that's a good distinction to make, that in terms of production value, your expectations have stayed the same, or in this case, gone up, because it's a different environment, and the cinematic matches, begrudgingly to my soul, although I will get into that later on, are really what WWE is allowed to do right now, given that they really have the creative freedom to do it, right? And so, yes, that's a good distinction to make, that the quality of matches, to me, I don't look at as taking the bar down. I still look at quality of matches. I care about quality of matches. But like you said, it's the returns, it's the big angles, it's the, you know, heel turn, babyface turn, all that kind of stuff, that those big moments, as WWE likes to always talk about, moments and moments and moments. those are the ones that I'm, you know, I don't want, and I don't think WWE wants to do it in front of nobody either. So that's a good distinction to make. So I guess before we get into Extreme Rules, one final question, so we kind of end on this on the positive note, is what is right now, if you were to try to single out one thing, if you can, one thing, one angle, it can be NXT, it can be Raw, SmackDown, what is your favorite thing going on right now in WWE?
Oof. All right. So it's a good question. My Homer answer in that it's the thing that I have documented on the NXT show, and it's the thing that I always wanted to happen is Keith Lee and being the NXT and North American champion, because on the main roster, we've seen Triple H and Kane for the World Heavyweight and Intercontinental title. We've seen the European title get absorbed into the Intercontinental title. Easy for me to say, but it's rare that you see, or rather it never happens, that you see that the NXT and North American champions are the same person. And so for Keith Lee, just being a superhuman in the ring, it's so cool to see him be a double champion and him undoubtedly being the top guy in NXT and the person that they're going to build around. That's been very cool to see. For a longer term thing on Raw, it's been really great seeing Drew McIntyre as WWE champion. The old Drew McIntyre that first came back and was just the Scottish psychopath was kind of boring, and he tread water a lot, and you thought that he was a guy that had the potential, or rather all the potential in the world, and was just never going to get that chance. His lot in life was to lose to Roman at WrestleMania, and that was going to be it. But Drew finally wins the title, and now he's the first champion in this quote-unquote COVID era, and I think that he's done a really great job, and I'm having fun watching Drew as the champion every week on Raw, and I think that's what you want from your WWE champion, especially in a company like WWE, where they generally have a babyface on the top and heels chasing. It's been really fun watching Drew make the most of this bad situation.
I like those two things. Now, I agree with you on the Keith Lee situation. It's number one, his match with Adam Cole was really, really good. I enjoyed seeing Keith Lee. I think he will be a double champion for a long time, at least 3 months. When I say long time, you got to think in relative terms right. of WWE, right? So, yes, I agree with that. Now, if I was to pick, quote, main roster stuff, although I'm trying not to use that terminology because NXT has really been able to stand on its own 2 feet and has kicked AEW's ass the last, what, 4 weeks or so? I mean, bad. So, again, I look at them as a legitimate third brand. It's taken some time, and I know that many fans who don't watch NXT still look at NXT as a third brand, or not as a third brand, but kind of like the feeding grounds for the main roster. You know, the shows that really matter are Raw and SmackDown, and NXT is kind of where they grow up. But I've kind of come around to know, like, some stars want to go back. Kevin Owens has been very vocal about wanting to go back to NXT. Look what Finn Balor's done going back. So, with all that being said, I guess my favorite thing going on WWE as a whole, if I was to pick one through all three brands, again, Keith Lee's good. But I would say, honestly, Randy Orton. I mean, Randy Orton has, I think, come out and shown what he can truly do. And we were seeing the potential that we knew was there through all the years of just kind of floating through SmackDown, being that legacy star, hitting RKO, burn down Sister Abigail's house, you know, rotate in and out of the main event, occasionally carry the belt and just kind of float. And he's so good he doesn't have to really try, which has been Edge's whole promo the last 3 months, and it's true. But with Randy Orton going back to being a true heel, like, I truly don't like him as a character. Like, I feel like I'm a kid again watching Randy Orton believing that he's a really bad guy. It's like believing in Santa Claus again, right? He's making me feel anger, and I don't feel that much anger in WWE because they never allow the heels to breathe. They don't allow heels to get heat and hold the heat. Look what they do with Baron Corbin on a weekly basis. I mean, in the same show, they'll typically build heat and then have it get paid off. I mean, so I like being angry as a fan, and Randy Orton's making me very angry, and that's the highest compliment that I can give to Randy Orton. I'm really looking forward to Edge's return, whenever that may be, but Randy Orton being that slithering, just delusional heel with now Ric Flair at his side, I mean, I don't know. I am absolutely loving what Randy Orton's been doing. Really, since Edge's return until really we speak currently. So that's my favorite right now.
I, would agree with that. I think Edge was right. Randy needed somebody like Edge to come back to light a fire under him. You can very much tell when Randy is just running through the motions. He's still very good. He's a very naturally talented wrestler, and he has an effective promo for his character. But you can absolutely tell when he is just running through the motions and is not into something. And with Edge coming back, he is clearly the most into it that he has been for anything since I don't remember, and he's doing the best work he's done since he punted Stephanie McMahon to get to Triple H and was doing that heel run.
That's right.
It's absolutely the best work of his career, and that translates to in the ring too. I would agree with you. It's one of the best things going on right now.
It's like Randy Orton took himself off cruise control. He was asleep at the wheel for years, and we all were just kind of like, cool, like, he's really good. He can seriously be sleepwalking and do this. That's how good he is. And now he's finally awake, taking control of the wheel, and it's like a flip has been switched, and it's awesome to see. And to see Randy Orton actually care about what's going on is awesome. So, I mean, we all knew it was there. We all knew that if he ever did flip it, this would happen, and it's happening. So, I mean, my whole thing is build heat, because it makes you want to get behind somebody to live vicariously through them to beat the holy hell out of that heel. And I'm of the belief right now of Randy Orton not losing a single match until Edge comes back, which maybe it's the Royal Rumble. I mean, really, I don't want Randy Orton to lose at all, or even have a deserving beating put on him. I want maybe a taste of it, but he'll escape or he'll hit a low blow or something. I want to be so angry that when Edge comes back, he is like the second coming of Christ. I mean, that is what I want, and they're on the path to that. So, you know, we'll see. But let's get into Extreme Rules. I'm excited to talk to you about this because there's a lot of interesting matchups that I've really gone back and forth on, and some of them look like locks. Some of them look like slam dunks that you bet the farm on, but I don't know as I go through this. So let's just start. I'm going to start here with the SmackDown Tag Team Championships with, again, it's a tables match for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships, The New Day versus Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro. You go first on this one.
All right. You are correct that there are a few that you feel like you could bet the farm on. Based on our track record the last couple times, you and I would have lost several farms, because even though we're thinking about it logically, it just never quite works out. It's interesting because I don't know if this is actually true or if this is just a bias I have in my head, but I think of a tables match as the ultimate undeserving winner match or surprise winner match.
Bingo.
So I have two competing things going on in my head. Cesaro and Shinsuke laying out the New Day on SmackDown generally means that they're not going to win at the end, but a tables match is 100% a Kofi is on the top rope and Cesaro at the last minute just throws him off through a table, and Cesaro and Shinsuke are the new tag team champions. And I feel like that's what my gut is telling me, is that this is a way to get the titles off of the New Day without beating them directly.
That's exactly what this is for, because had it been, you know, any other match type, there's probably there's limited amount of finishes you could do that would protect the baby faces, in this case, protecting the New Day. So yeah, the tables match is a perfect way, because they're not being pinned. They're not being submitted. It's a very easy out for a heel team. And this is exactly what's going to happen. As you're putting that image in my mind of Kofi on the top, maybe Cesaro is pulled off by Shinsuke at the last moment and Kofi puts himself through the table. So they not only lose, but they lose via themselves, who it's not because of the tag team that they're facing. It's because of their own, you know, their own mistakes. So they have a really good way to protect themselves from damaging, as WWE likes to make sure that New Day is always protected. I think Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro win here. They have, over the last few weeks, been really focusing on making them a legitimate tag team. Now, we've seen times where they do that as kind of hot-shotting to make it look like they could dethrone the champion, and then at the pay-per-view, they end up losing. But in this case, Shinsuke and Cesaro have really good chemistry. They've actually gotten promo time for the first time in like 3 months.
Imagine that.
I know. And so I really believe that, to me, they do take the belts off of New Day. It's not nearly a guarantee, but the stipulation here is the key. The stipulation is how you are allowed to beat a babyface team while still protecting them, and that's exactly what's going to happen here.
Otherwise, I don't see a point. You need more tag teams. I love the New Day. I don't always love how not seriously they take things, but as a faction, I love New Day beyond belief. And I am never going to be mad at them winning or retaining the tag titles, because they are the top tag team in WWE, and they are always entertaining. But Shinsuke Nakamura has been disappointing, and I don't think it's his fault, since he lost to AJ at WrestleMania and that subsequent feud for the WWE title. Cesaro has always been a guy that you could do more with, but Vince doesn't like him because he's Swiss. And Cesaro's a surprisingly good tag team wrestler. He's had a great one with Sheamus. He can have a great one with Shinsuke. And I think if you're going to make a new tag team, if Sheamus can beat somebody to win the world title in a tables match, Cesaro and Shinsuke can accidentally win the tag team titles.
Exactly. This is going to fall into their lap. And that's how you're going to build this. And I don't think Vince ever really understood Shinsuke Nakamura, which is why after WrestleMania he kind of soured on him. And like you said with Cesaro, the infamous line on Austin's podcast a few years ago that, you know, why isn't he reaching his full potential? And Vince says, well, I don't know, maybe because he's Swiss. I mean, that's the most ignorant answer. I mean, the owner of the company is saying this and believing that it's because of his nationality that he is being held back or not really reaching his full potential is asinine. But that's another topic. This to me, I'd be very, very interested if this was in front of a live crowd, what the reaction would be with Shinsuke and Cesaro, particularly with Cesaro, who is kind of the underdog Daniel Bryan story of being mistreated over several years. And the fans respect the hell out of him. They know he can go. He's one of the best performers WWE has. He is truly what his shirt says in being a wrestling purist. I'd be very interested to hear what the crowd reaction would be. I don't think it would be 100% New Day. I believe it would be pretty split down the middle with the crowd reaction. Do you think that would be the case if this was in front of a live crowd?
I agree that it would, and I was trying to remember if it was Cesaro and TJ, or I forget who it was, but there, when New Day was working with Cesaro and another person, they were surprised because New Day were the faces, and this was when New Day was new, and it ended up in a situation where Cesaro was on the heel team, but people love Cesaro, and so they got the face reaction, and then New Day just adjusted to it. I would agree that I think if this were in front of a live crowd, I think Cesaro has always gotten cheered. Even when he was in the bar, when he would get tagged in, he would be cheered because the fans love him, and they know that Vince won't do anything with him. And the whole, I guess because he's Swiss line, I absolutely think that Cesaro and Shinsuke would get cheers as well. I don't know if it would be a situation where they both get cheered or if it's just one team getting cheered, but I definitely think that Cesaro would continue that tradition, and he would absolutely be cheered.
Especially if this isn't like a big market, right? If this was happening, I don't know where Extreme Rules is originally supposed to take place, but if it was in like a semi-big market, like anywhere in the Northeast with New York or Chicago, God forbid, or L.A. or something like that, those larger markets tend to be pretty, quote, smarter, or they're a little bit more, I hate to say it's intelligent than the normal fan, but they tend to be the more hardcore
behind
audience. And so I think it was in front of like a Chicago crowd. This would be 80-20 in favor of Cesaro and Shinsuke. But nonetheless, I think people, honestly, as much as you love the New Day, are probably wearing a little bit thin on them wearing the belts, because when they're champions, I honestly don't care, because I always feel like they're just the kind of resident champions that are always there. And I don't know. You're probably a much bigger fan of the New Day than I am, because I feel like this team has, especially with Big E on it, who has the potential to be a big breakout main event star, how they haven't done that yet, I don't know. But I've kind of worn thin for many years of the New Day's act, and Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro spoke to that. So, do you
ever see? Interesting, they did speak to that, and you're right. And I think that I am higher on it than most people, and I think it's because I think it has a lot to do with I don't think African Americans get a lot of representation in WWE, and if they do, they get it in like the R-Truth way where everybody laughs at them. And so I think I latched on to New Day, but I would agree that it never really hit me until Kofi was the WWE champion and he would come out with a stack of pancakes. I always hated that when he was in a feud with Randy Orton and he comes out throwing pancakes. Like, you don't always need to be the funny, we don't take this seriously New Day. You can be a team that is taking this seriously and is trying to get into your opponent's head, but it seems like they need that extra layer, or WWE needs to use that extra layer, because Kofi, Xavier, and Big E are all very creative men. I'm sure that they've pitched the idea of, like, when they go and face the Usos and the New Day have had a lot of segments together that were not funny. And Big E gets to get on the mic and cut a scathing promo, and they get to take things seriously, and that's when New Day's at their best. So I would agree, I'm wearing a little bit thin on that particular aspect of New Day.
Yeah, and it's a good point. It's a much larger topic to talk about of WWE's mishaps with African American superstars that have been misrepresented or really done in just terrible taste with stereotypes like Crime Time. I mean, right, like the Mexicools, I bring up those two examples as just off the top of my head. R-Truth, who is just a comedy act at this point. Again, the argument against that would be, well, look what they're doing with Apollo Crews. He's the champion. Look what they've done now with Keith Lee, a double champion. Look what they've done with Lashley, who was in the main event and now kind of gone back to obscurity, but I think he's got bigger days ahead. So they kind of go up and down, left and right. I mean, you have the Street Profits as tag team champ, Raw tag team champions, but they're kind of a joke. They're too busy, you know, worrying about bowling matches and shot put and all that kind of weird stuff they're doing with the Viking Raiders. So they do. They take African Americans as kind of as a comedy segment more often than not. But at the same time, there's also an argument to be made that they're starting to at least do things in the sometimes do it in the right way. It's weird. It's a much larger discussion for sure.
It is, and I definitely hope that you are right and that this is a change as opposed to with everything happening with really everything. Uh-huh. And they felt that their hand was forced, and I sincerely hope that it is not that, and if it is that, I hope that at least everybody that is getting this opportunity, and everybody who's getting an opportunity absolutely deserves it. There are no free handouts being given here. I hope that they can continue this going forward and that they don't have a situation where Bobby Lashley just fades into obscurity. I hope that he can get his match with Brock Lesnar. I wanted that when he first came back. I was super excited he was back. So I hope you're right. It is a much larger discussion than what we're doing here at Extreme Rules Horror Show. But I do hope that everything that they've built towards, is it really, really late? Absolutely. But all you can do is move forward and make it better. And so I hope that they're able to do that. But in this case, I think Cesaro and Shinsuke can be made a lot better by having the titles than the New Day can.
Agreed. I mean, Shinsuke, Nakamura, and Cesaro, and we all know that the tag team depth on SmackDown, Raw, really on all rosters, is pretty thin. To create a new tag team that's legitimate and you can add to the mix is certainly a good thing. I mean, for a while it was just New Day, Usos. It was kind of like back and forth, and you started to care less. You didn't really care about who was champion because it was just like kind of a back and forth deal. But, you know, you bring up a good point, and it is bordering on political, and so this is the closest I'll get. But like, I will echo your statement that you wonder. It's very suspicious that WWE has, over the last few weeks, crowned several African-American champions. And you do wonder, is this by design or was it done out of kind of pure guilt or force? And yeah. You'll never know. We'll never know.
No, we sure won't. The best you can hope for is that WWE has this system where you are either on the top or nothing. They have an Intercontinental title. They have a United States title. But the way that they use them doesn't really mean anything. So you are either in the main event or you are not. And the best that we can hope for is that they just saw Bobby Lashley and said, we need somebody for Drew. And they saw Apollo Crews and they said, well, nobody's using him. Let's use him. And they moved forward like that. And they saw MVP and just thought he'd make a great mouthpiece for him. The history of WWE, on one hand, would lead me to believe that that is not at all the case. But on the other hand, I can absolutely see a world where they just forgot that Bobby Lashley and MVP and Apollo Crews were on their roster, and they remembered during a crisis when they needed talent and had to use them. I think that's the best we can hope for.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that. You know, certainly the other scenario is very, very possible given how concerned they are about public image and being a progressive company and doing so much for the women, and they have they celebrate African American Month every year in February and all that. But again, you do wonder about public image and their sponsors, everything else. Are they doing this out of political pressure, or are they doing this out of just happenstance that, there's a crisis going on with racial issues in the world, or in the United States and now the world, and it just happens to be perfect coincidence that we are also crowning these champions. We were planning this way before any of the George Floyd stuff, but who the hell knows? All right, let's move on. Apollo Crews, speaking of which, versus MVP for the United States Championship. Again, I'll toss this to you for the brand new United States Championship that MVP has been parading around with.
The brand new United States Championship that Twitter immediately made better by simply adding blue to the top. I always think that's hilarious. It feels weird to have MVP hold it. If this were Bobby Lashley, I would say Bobby Lashley. I can see a world where MVP wins, but I don't necessarily see the point of MVP winning it. I think it's much more effective for the heel to introduce a new title that the internet immediately makes better, and then for the face to kind of defeat him for it, and then MVP is kind of humiliated a bit, which is what your heel ends up being at the end of everything. So I think it's much more likely that Apollo Crews wins than it is that MVP walks away with the title that he created.
Agreed. I just don't see a world – as much as I love MVP on the mic, and he has certainly been a breakout star over the last month, or really 2 months, with Bobby – or being interjected with Drew McIntyre at the last pay-per-view. As much as I love him on the mic and everything else, and he's really, really exceeding my expectations since he's come back, I don't see the value in him winning the championship when the focus should be on Bobby Lashley. It should not be on MVP. MVP fits in perfectly as that heel manager that can take a bump, can talk a great game. I mean, we have Paul Heyman, who does kind of the same thing, minus being able to get in the ring. He does the same thing for Brock Lesnar, who is kind of awkward on the mic. I mean, if you've ever seen his promos before without Paul Heyman, they sometimes go fine, but they're just weird, and Brock Lesnar just has never been able to really absorb and adapt that that promo ability, nor has he really needed to, right? So you could argue that he hasn't had to, because WWE pays him millions of dollars to come in. He doesn't have to be. He's not forced. It doesn't feel the pressure to try to learn how to do a promo. But Bobby Lashley is now – I mean, he's tried the promo thing. It's been weird. He's kind of the awkward phase too that – I don't think it's just there for Lashley in the promo world, at least in the WWE world of it. I mean, I've seen him in Impact and him be a heel in Impact, and it was good. But I don't know. To me, final thought is that, Apollo Crews retains. I don't see any point in MVP winning when Lashley should be the focus of that duo, not MVP. Are you there? Did I lose you?
Yeah, sir. No, you're good. Okay. I thought I lost you for a second.
All right. Any final thoughts on Apollo Crews and MVP?
I just hope that Apollo wins, and I hope that they keep doing things with him. I always think that it helps with an Intercontinental or United States title for it to be somebody who's up and coming. That was the original point of the Intercontinental title and the United States title. So I hope that they keep building Apollo Crews with it. I hope that he eventually turns heel. And I definitely think the title does more for Apollo Crews than it would do for MVP. MVP's success is Bobby Lashley's success. Apollo Crews' success is just Apollo Crews's. So I don't see a world where you take that title off Apollo Crews yet.
Yeah, I don't see it either. They haven't really fully fleshed out his run. He's kind of, even though he's the United States champion on Raw, he's not exactly a focal point at all. And this is supposed to be the secondary belt from the top, equivalent to the IC title on SmackDown. And he's champion, but again, they're not presenting him in a way that feels important. He's just carrying a belt that honestly means more than his character at this point, and it should be the opposite. So yeah. Until they make Apollo Crews feel like a champion, he doesn't feel like a champion. Like, he just feels like a guy holding a belt that WWE hopefully didn't just do out of, like, throwing everyone a bone. And to me, this should be Apollo Crews getting this new United States Championship and taking off. Like, I want to see what he can do beyond smiling and being this same character he's been since he came up from NXT, one of the first NXT call-ups. And yeah. I just hope that they do something beyond this smiling, happy-go-lucky babyface champion that they just constantly talk about how athletic he is. Give us some substance to his character. So, all right. Here comes a very interesting one. And I'm going to toss it to you again for the third time here because I need time to really think. And I'm curious about your perception on this, particularly the finish of this match. How the hell they're going to do this eye for an eye match. Rey Mysterio versus Seth Rollins. And they did make it clear that the way that you win this match is to gouge your opponent's eye out. It wasn't just a figure of speech. Uh-huh. It was actually literally said. How the hell did they do this? Who wins?
That's correct. And Matt, I don't understand what your problem is. A grown man's going to bowl another grown man's eye out, and the match doesn't end until either the masked guy who has a mask gets his eye pulled out, or the guy who kind of thinks he's Jesus gets his eye pulled out. So which specific part of that were you having trouble with, Matt? Because it seems great to me.
I mean, it's pretty straightforward. It's especially in the PG era. I don't know. This is right up PG alley.
You ever watch wrestling, Matt? Wrestling 101. All right. I feel like you. When you watched Money in the Bank and the podcast after was just a flamethrower. And when you did the Money in the Bank review, specifically the match itself and the cinematic part, I disagreed in how I felt about it, but I understood your point. I feel like that about this match because this feud has been built very well. It's been built. I love Rey Mysterio. I love what Seth Rollins is doing. And they built the story very well with him injuring Rey's eye. So it was built very well for a match. This is something WWE does. We make movies, pal. Where they decided because Rey Mysterio got his eye injured and him and Dominic almost injured Seth Rollins' eye, well, clearly the only thing to do here is to have an eye for an eye match where the only way to win is pull out somebody's eye, and we're going to try and work with some CGI technology so that it doesn't look stupid when a grown man in a wrestling ring after a drop kick pulls out another grown man's eyeball. And then 2 weeks later on Raw, whoever loses is going to have their eye back. So this is dumb and I hate it. It seems as though Rey Mysterio is not currently under contract with WWE. It makes more sense for Rey to lose. Seth Rollins hasn't had a great win percentage since he's come back as the Monday Night Messiah, since losing to Kevin Owens at WrestleMania, losing to him again on Raw. So it feels like Seth Rollins is going to win and pull Rey Mysterio's eyeball out. And then I guess we're just going to move on, I guess. This is dumb. You guys make bad movies. It's not just movies. This is going to be stupid. And Twitter is just going to be oh my God, look at the effects they did. They look so bad afterward. Matt, I'm going to toss this dead fish right under your lap, bud.
That's what hurts. That's what makes this really bad, is that the story going to this was really good.
Uh-huh. Right?
They did a great job. I will give credit where credit is due. This has overachieved my expectations, especially Rey Mysterio as a whole upon his return to WWE has far exceeded my expectations. The chemistry with Seth and Rey is unexpected. And Dominic being in this, he's all in. It doesn't seem like he's kind of like winking and nodding like, yeah, like I'm not really into this wrestling stuff. He is. And I like Dominic's insertion into this too. The whole father-son angle, it's got emotion. Rollins coming into his character, understanding himself more. Just all of it has been really good. And now you have this eye for an eye match. I said there's no way they're going to really do this, right? I said no way it can be. It should be just a part of a promo. That should be maybe like the go-home line of – you know what they say, an eye for an eye, and then drop the mic. But it's not an actual match. It shouldn't be a stipulation for a match because you are truly booking yourself into a corner here of you're telling me that you're going to do permanent damage to one of your stars.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, what are you going to do, hang on to this angle of them wearing an eye patch for the rest of their career? I mean, it doesn't make any sense, and plus it's a PG era. This I don't even know if this would have been done in the Attitude Era. Much
right.
less in the PG era. So I don't know how they do this. I think Rey Mysterio loses, as you said. It like you said, I don't know. It seems like he's not under contract with WWE, which would really foreshadow the outcome here that Rey is probably going to lose this match. And he should, because Seth Rollins is doing a great job, and I like where he's going with his character. So maybe AOP, if they come back, end up interfering and costing Rey Mysterio the match and his eye. But if someone's eye is truly taken out and this doesn't get paid off, I actually, for the first time, don't want this to be paid off. I don't want to see someone's eye being pulled out, not because, oh my God, I'm going to get grossed out, but just, it's like you said, it's stupid, and you can't pay off this angle without it having permanent effects on any further storyline that either men have, or the guy who has his eye pulled out have, right? So if you ever bring Rey Mysterio back and he's got his eye grown back, it's just ridiculous. So I don't know. I hope they don't pay this off. I hope they come close, but then somebody saves Rey Mysterio, and I don't know. But again, if the match is only ending that way, maybe we get a non-finish. I'll go with a non-finish. This could not be any worse of a stipulation.
This is the first time in my wrestling fandom, which goes back a long time, where I've wanted a non-finish. I always hate them. I always think they're anticlimactic. I want both of them to be laid out and not be able to continue in some way, shape, or form, because this is just, even for wrestling, this is ridiculous. And wrestling's the most ridiculous thing on the planet.
Uh-huh.
It reminded me of when Jon Moxley was on Talk as Jericho, and he was doing the program with Seth before he quit, and the promo that was written for him had a line that said, "Pooper Scooper."
That's right.
And when they rewrote the promo, John said, "I knew we had to rewrite it, and the problem is," he wrote something to the effect of, "I have to have a gas mask on before I come around to all these fans." And John said, "I should have known not to put that in there, because Vince falls in love with nouns." And so the next week he came out wearing a gas mask. This is 100% what you said. Somebody at the end of this was supposed to say, Ray probably, "At Extreme Rules Horror Show, it's going to be eye for an eye." And then Vince saw that and said, "That's such good..." And then decided that an eye for an eye match was an actual good match. And it's stupid, and there's one person in the company that thinks it's going to be good, and he's wrong.
Very wrong. I mean, if Ray wanted to, throughout the match, try to attack Seth's eye and do what he did to him with the corner of the steps, makes total sense. That, to me, is an eye for an eye, where you have tit for tat, just like Edge did to Orton at WrestleMania when he finally got the concerto on Orton after Orton had done the same thing to him 2 months earlier. That's how you pay this off, right? Maybe if you damage Seth's eye for, say, a month, you know, 5-6 weeks, you could get away with it, him having an eye patch, and eventually it comes around that, okay, he's not his eye's still there. But to actually say you're going to rip your eye out, there are permanent repercussions for this. This is not a stipulation that goes away. You know, human evolution has not come so far as to be able to regenerate an eyeball. It's not a thing. So I don't understand this. This is the worst case scenario for a stipulation. I know what they're going for. Shock value. It's extreme rules, pal, as we always say. No, no, that's not what we need. So maybe they have something we're not thinking of in terms of a finish. And if they do, I will applaud it of something you and I are not thinking of. But if they truly go with somebody's eye being pulled out, that is the worst case scenario. So.
It's absolutely the worst case. You absolutely could have gotten out of this match by having a spot in the match where Ray drops Seth onto the steel steps the same way that Seth did to him,
yes,
and injures his eye. And then you can either have Seth win, or if you want Ray to win, you can go through it that way. That's absolutely the way to pay this back, is that they tried to do it. His friends were there. So his friends come back, and then Alistair and Dominic all come out, and they help. And then Rey Mysterio drops Seth Rollins or hits his head against the steel steps. That's a great way to end this story. That's an eye for an eye, and then you can go on with the rest of the match. What you can't do is yank Rey Mysterio's eye out and then have him come back at the Royal Rumble next year with two functioning eyeballs.
You can't. And the thing is, WWE probably wouldn't care enough to worry about that. Because
oh, let me be clear. They're 100% going to have him come back at the Royal Rumble with two functioning eyeballs. You and I are just going to be the two a-holes in the back going, his eye was taken out.
Yeah.
And then nobody's going to care.
No. No one's going to care because Vince believes that wrestling fans have no memory whatsoever. And I think he, at times, really insults the fans' intelligence. I really believe that. So, again, I will be the first to admit if they come up with a finish that I go, oh, okay, that actually made sense, fine. I will be the first to say I was wrong in this stipulation being terrible. But to me, the odds are this is a terrible stipulation that cannot truly be paid off. This is, like you said, this is the first time in the history of me watching wrestling, which is probably as long as you, that I don't want the stipulation to come into to be paid off. I want this match to end in just some kind of non-finish, like, or maybe a Survivor Series 1999 where somebody gets hit by a car in the back like Stone Cold did, and the match can't happen. Like somebody gets tossed off of a bridge, something where this match cannot happen. Is I'm all for that too. I mean, so it was just a damn shame because it's one of the best storylines WWE has, especially on Raw. Probably number two only to Orton and really Edge / Christian / Big Show. That is, to me, the biggest crime in all of this is you build a great story, you tell a great story, and the final chapter is garbage. So, now again, we haven't read the final chapter, but it's not looking good. So, okay, something better is Bayley versus Nikki Cross. I'll take this one for the SmackDown Women's Championship first here. I will say this. I think I'm in the minority that I'm not a Nikki Cross fan. And I don't mean that in a way of, like, I don't think she's a good performer. I'm not saying I don't think she's good on the mic. I don't like her character as presently constituted as a babyface. I find her obnoxious. I find her kind of the clingy friend that is hanging out with the cooler girl at school that's always being loud and just happy to be friends with the popular girl. I find her just very again, I don't find her funny. And again, this is not me advocating for go away heat. This is just me not liking her or trying to or going along with the babyface character that we're supposed to cheer for. I find Nikki Cross obnoxious. She's on the mic or on commentary screaming. I find it very distracting and not in a good way. I really, really, really don't like her this loud, obnoxious character as a babyface. If she was a heel, this would be fine. But that's me. So with that being said, I think she's good in the ring. I think her and Bayley are going to have a very good match. Bayley is just killing it right now, is having probably the run of her career with Sasha Banks. Her promo, she finally found and understood what this Bayley character as a heel is, which took some time, but she's finally gotten there. She's comfortable. It looks like she's just out there having fun. She's not feeling like she's very robotic or scripted. She's just being the obnoxious heel Bayley, and her and Sasha are gold right now. With that being said, I guess pun intended, I don't see any scenario in which Nikki Cross comes out as women's champion of the SmackDown brand. I just don't. Bayley wins here. convincingly. I think it's – I don't care if it's by hook or crook or the dreaded roll-up that is happening in 5 out of every 6 matches. that's how – again, I don't understand the logic behind the roll-up that is just plaguing WWE in their finish land here. But Bayley wins this. I don't care how. I don't care why. And it's not a good idea to put it on Nikki right now. Bayley is killing it. I don't want Nikki Cross to be the one to kill this streak. So that's my thought. What about you?
I would agree. I think that Nikki's character feels weird because it's not the Nikki Cross that I watched in NXT. In NXT, she was just an insane, unhinged person who just wanted to fight and was just a crazy person. And she's really good at portraying that. And then one day, Alexa Bliss needs a fill-in, and she is a hanger-on for Alexa Bliss. Alexa Bliss is my favorite women's wrestler, and so I'm fine with that. But it feels, you're right, like the cool girl who you're actually trying to talk to has a friend that is just constantly coming around, and, no, we came together, we're leaving together. And is always there.
Yeah, that's a whole conversation that we could probably have much different, in, especially in my college years. It's the, yeah, we know the term for those girls. And, yeah, I know, I gotcha.
We do, and that's why you bring a friend.
Yes.
But it's a situation where it doesn't feel like her. She has the opposite problem of Bayley. She very much feels like somebody who is doing a role that is not her and that she's not able to do as well as she possibly could because you need it to have some semblance of you. And I agree, Bayley is having the best run of her career. For somebody who didn't want to turn heel, she has really taken to it well. It took some time, but often it does for the best heels. And here we are with a situation where I don't want anybody to take the title off of Bayley, except maybe Sasha once they finally do the turn. So 100%. Bayley's going to win, and I imagine she'll win fairly convincingly, and then we can move on. And I imagine this will just be another step in the chapter of Sasha and Bayley, and we can move on because 100% Nikki Cross is not going to be your new women's champion.
She just can't be. It's especially this close to SummerSlam, where I think Bayley's probably going to be again in some kind of multi-woman match, maybe with Shayna Baszler. I mean, who knows? WWE has really thrown in the towel once again to explaining why Raw stars are on SmackDown and SmackDown stars are on Raw. And we all knew that they could not hold out long. I understand we're in the COVID era. I understand that they have to make the best TV they can and their ratings are at an all-time low. I get all that. But, you know, I would love to see them do a brand split once, just once, where they actually adhere to their own rules instead of coming up with wild card rules and all these things that they don't even follow that. But that being said, Bayley needs to stay champion. She's killing it. Now, on the Raw Women's side here, as we transition seamlessly into the Raw Women's Championship match with Asuka versus Sasha Banks, this is the one that really made me think on SmackDown last night is – you know, originally I'm like, oh, well, Asuka has to retain here. She was awarded the championship belt at Money in the Bank, unknowingly winning it at Money in the Bank, as we all know Becky announced her pregnancy. And, you know, typically when you win it and you have somebody of Becky's stature hand it to you, and Asuka earned it, that typically that would hold for a while. However, I would say that my thinking has changed to thinking that Sasha Banks is probably going to win the Raw Women's Championship. The reason I say that is a couple of reasons. Number one, there's nobody hotter in WWE right now, I would argue, especially on the women's side, than Bayley and Sasha. No. Number two, I think there's not going to be another opportunity, at least in the near future, for them to hold all the gold, right? They are so good and so obnoxious. How much heat would they get if they held every women's championship outside of the NXT, of course, every women's championship that there is to hold on either brand? And so this is either do it now or don't do it at all. And I would say Sasha Banks wins. They're going to come out and they're playing – WWE's playing the long game with Sasha Banks versus Bayley. They teased it for a while, and this is one of those turns that we talked about earlier in the show – I would not do until you're in front of a live audience because you have teased it for so long. Play the long game and make Sasha champion. Dig in deeper to, oh, man, they're not doing it yet. Clearly they're not if they just made Sasha champion. And you have another road to go. another layer to get through before you finally get that turn from Sasha or Bayley. So I'm a big proponent of Sasha winning here. It's not that I don't enjoy Asuka as champion. I think she's doing really well. I like that Kairi Sane is back with her. It's just that Sasha and Bayley trump Asuka right now in really taking over WWE's women's division, because it's never been done before. They could say, and WWE loves to say, first time ever, right? They love all this first time ever stuff. This is the time to do it. And I would love to see these two on every show. I mean, they've been on every show anyway, but to have a reason to be there and to have their own programs and to really string this out as long as it takes until you're back in front of live fans. So I am really hoping Sasha Banks wins. And again, it's nothing against Asuka. You know, if Asuka retains, I'm not going to be mad, but I think the more important outcome here is Sasha to win, and those two carry all the gold.
I would agree. I think that the better outcome is absolutely Sasha winning, because you further the Bayley and Sasha storyline, and then you have a champion on every brand. They hold all the gold. In order to get any of the gold, you have to go through one or both of them. I like that story a lot. My thinking is that I don't know if they're going to pull the trigger on that story or if they're going to want to keep Asuka as the Raw Women's Champion and further the story a bit of Sasha and Bayley, because every week it seems like they have a moment where Sasha is either looking at the SmackDown Women's title for a little bit too long, or Bayley could have helped Sasha break up a pin, but she didn't. They keep having these little moments, and I think that it's almost more likely that WWE has a moment in there where Bayley unintentionally costs Sasha the belt as opposed to having Sasha win it. I think this is another symptom, similar to Nikki Cross, where Asuka in NXT was just this warrior that went through everybody and had these great matches, and since she's been on Raw, she's done the one stupid dance that they have her do, and she's taken less seriously. So I can absolutely see Sasha beating her. I think that they will have Asuka win, but I'm with you that I would love to see Sasha win, and then they just have all the gold. I think that would be the better story.
It would, because they're so close to having all the gold. Why not just do it? There's no better time. All these experiments WWE has done, whether we love them or hate them, I don't blame them for doing them right now. You have no fans, essentially, no real fans. It's time to just experiment and see what happens and see how the fans react on social media, which is really the only place you can gauge how they're feeling. although I don't have a Twitter account anymore because it was banned, but that's a whole other story. And I was banned on Facebook, so somebody's after me. But nonetheless,
making it big, huh?
Yeah, I don't know what the hell's going on. But with Sasha Banks and Bayley, yeah, like you said, those little moments. The other little moments I've noticed too are them volunteering the other for a match, where they'll say, "Yo, Sasha will take you on. She's the blueprint. She's the standard." You know, and then Sasha will do the same thing to Bayley, and so they'll have their moments, and then they'll look back like, "What did you just do? Why did you just make me, you know, compete in a match?" So those little moments that they tease, and then they pull back, and then they're like besties for a couple of weeks, and then they tease. I like it, because WWE is saying to us, yeah, we know it's coming. You know it's coming, but you don't know when it's coming. So it's like WWE acknowledging that we all know at some point it's going to happen, but we're not ready to pull the trigger. And yes, by all means, by God, please do not pull the trigger until you're in front of fans. I don't care if we're not back in front of fans until 4 months. You could string this out that long. I think you could. There's a lot of legs left with these two, particularly if they're holding all the gold. I think eventually what will happen is that I think it'll be Sasha, if they do indeed hold all the gold, if you go in reverse to the disintegration of this team, it would be if Sasha wins it tomorrow night on Extreme Rules, then Sasha would probably be the first one to lose the Raw Women's Championship, maybe back to Asuka or Shayna Baszler. And then you have the tag team championships get lost. And then the last thing you would do is go back to Bayley, who has the SmackDown Women's Championship that has held it probably close to a year at that point or more, and that's the final championship that is that Sasha Banks ends up maybe winning a tournament or some kind of tension is built. But it would probably be the disintegration of the Raw Women's Championship, then the SmackDown or then the Women's Tag Team Championships, and then Bayley's most important prize of the SmackDown Women's Championship. That would be the final straw, I think, for those two.
I would agree, and I think that that's absolutely the best version of this story that they can tell. My concern is that they'll just have Sasha lose and they'll keep leaving breadcrumbs, and then eventually they'll just do it out of nowhere and keep pretending that they're not. But I agree. I think that the best way to do this story is to have them hold all the gold. You're right, they've never done it before and they would love to tout that fact. And then you can do a slow disintegration. I agree. That's absolutely, I think, the best version of this story. And having Sasha be the Raw Women's Champion is a good placeholder until they can finally do that story. But yeah, I would agree. I think that that's the best possible version of the story.
This is probably the most that we've agreed on any topic. I mean, it's probably the most agreeable show that we've had, which doesn't happen often.
No.
So you don't believe me, go listen to the WrestleMania review.
Just wait till the main event.
Yeah, that's very true. So here we go. All right, well, this is, I guess, not the – this is the semi-main, although I'm not sure how they're going to play it. Drew McIntyre versus Dolph Ziggler for the WWE Championship. Is there any chance in hell that Dolph Ziggler wins here on Sunday?
No. No, there's not. There's never really a chance Dolph Ziggler's going to win. There's moments where he has like a surprising win, but it's very clear that WWE has never seen Dolph Ziggler as the guy. And he could have been, but it's at a point now where when he wins, you're surprised, and when he loses, you go, oh yeah, and when he comes back, you're like, oh, it's Dolph. Dolph is there because they have a little bit of history, and they needed somebody to work with Drew. They can make Drew look really good with Dolph. It's going to be a great match. There is not a plane of existence upon which Dolph Ziggler comes out on Raw as your WWE champion. We're going through with Drew. There's just, I'm not even, I could almost skip the match if I didn't think it was going to be good. Dolph's not winning.
So, yeah, I think you, I mean, yeah, that's as clear as it gets. The, you know, sometimes there's a little bit of me that's like, well, you know, Vince likes to shock and awe, and he does these swerves when he thinks that the fans know what's going to happen. He's done that in the past. And in this case, no, there's zero reason to make Dolph Ziggler champion. As you said, Dolph has been the guy that has been, you could argue, maybe the most misbooked or mismanaged star on the roster over his career. You could make that argument. Dolph Ziggler has never been great on the mic. He's been good at times. He's obviously spoken volumes inside the ring. He's been compared to Shawn Michaels many times, and I see why. He just never is ever going to be that guy. I just don't see a plan for that. I don't see WWE ever doing that based on how they have presented him over, like, what, 10 years? From the Spirit Squad to, you know, through cashing in the Money in the Bank of the Monday Night after WrestleMania to having Big E as his heavy to the Kofi Kingston, it should have been me thing, and now it's Drew McIntyre. I don't see in any world, in any universe, Dolph Ziggler winning this. Ziggler is the guy that WWE knows that they can plug and play with at any time. Dolph Ziggler is the guy that WWE can put in anybody with him, and they know that they're going to have a good match because Ziggler has that ability. But he's never going to be the guy to carry the championship, to carry the show. And he's just the kind of the gatekeeper for WWE, if you will. I mean, so, yeah, it's going to be a good match. There'll probably be a couple of times that'll be near falls on Drew, but Drew McIntyre wins this handily, and they move on to maybe a Lesnar return. I could honestly see Lesnar coming out at the end of this and F5-ing Drew and just staring down at him, or maybe even Bobby Lashley coming out and staring down Drew McIntyre and laying him out after Dolph Ziggler is flat on his back, because this is so predictable that you have to have some kind of path for Drew after this, and maybe it's immediately presented with Drew flat on his back via Lesnar and or Lashley at the end of this.
Yeah, there has to be something else, because even without a crowd, if there were a crowd, I don't think that they would be particularly excited about this. And Drew's going to win We all know that. So it almost feels like you have to have somebody else come out or do something, because it's going to feel a little flat if Drew just beats Dolph and then comes back out on Raw and somebody else challenges him. Drew's just simply not winning. They're not beating the person who they clearly have put a lot behind for Dolph Ziggler. That's just not something they're going to do. He can go in there with anybody and make them look good, and that's the problem with Dolph, is that he can make everybody look good, so he makes everybody look good. So Dolph's going to lose, and then hopefully we find out who our next challenger is after, because there's no way they're taking the title off Drew yet.
No, not a chance. I mean, I know that fans feel robbed of the moment to celebrate with Drew winning at WrestleMania. So I do believe that Drew is probably going to go into his next program immediately after and possibly lose his championship in the next program, only to win it back whenever we're back in front of fans, so fans can have that moment with Drew. So while he may lose it in the near future, I don't think it's against Ziggler, it could be at SummerSlam, he will regain it when fans are back to kind of maybe make good on that moment with Drew. So many people are pointing to Randy Orton versus Drew McIntyre at SummerSlam. I would be very interested in that. Having Randy Orton as champion would be extremely interesting. And I think, honestly, Randy Orton as champion right now would be a hook for me to watch Raw, even more than it is now. I think him as champion would be good. Again, the argument is, well, Drew just won it at WrestleMania. But again, he won it at WrestleMania, but he could gain. He's going to gain it back. It's going to be in front of fans whenever the heck that happens. But would you be interested in a Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton main event at SummerSlam?
I would be interested in the main event. My concern with Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton would be a couple things. Number one, that Randy Orton no longer has Edge. And I feel like once he's no longer in a program that's front-facing toward Edge, I don't know if Randy Orton is a guy anymore where having the WWE title means a lot to him. He's done it 14 times or something to that effect. And when he's the champion, it tends to fall a little bit flat for me. I would agree with you that it would be an interesting hook to watch. My concern would be that WWE would do what they did with Goldberg-Lesnar, where they put the title on Randy so that Edge and Randy down the line is for the title, which is a feud that does not need a title. Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho did, Goldberg, Brock Lesnar didn't. I don't think Randy Orton and Edge need a title. And I think if Randy Orton were the champion, the problem would be by the time fans come back, it wouldn't be Randy Orton, Drew McIntyre. It would be Randy Orton, Edge. And if Randy Orton is the world champion, then Edge is going to be the world champion. I'm fine with that. Edge is my favorite wrestler on Raw. But I think that Drew can do more with that title than Randy Orton can. I would love to see the program. My concern would be that they want to hold it for Orton Edge, which it does not need.
No, yeah, it doesn't need that, and I agree, but I don't think Vince would agree with us. He'd want to make it the biggest it could possibly be.
Yeah, of course.
But that it's interesting that having the most important belt actually would take away from a program because it's so thick with personal issues that I don't want my thought process or the focus of the match to be anything but the personal issues, right? So it's weird, and it's kind of like an argument for The Fiend. Does he really need the belt? And we'll get there next. But, that has been the rumor, and I've seen that too, that upon Edge's return that he will be in a championship picture shortly after his return, which would then point to, well, Randy's going to be champion. Which would then, if you backtrack further and follow the breadcrumbs, well, how does he get the championship? Well, Drew McIntyre at SummerSlam, right? And then you have Randy hold it until Edge's return. But like you said, if Randy's in a championship match, then, I think that you already have something special with the personal issues. It's as personal as it gets. These two have chemistry and have had magic without the championships. I think it would be a disservice to the championship to overshadow it with personal issues rather than being the focal point of winning the belt. My argument is also for not making Randy champion if, upon Edge's return, that's going to be the focus. So, yeah, it's a little bit convoluted. But nonetheless, back to our tomorrow night, we're getting four steps ahead. Drew McIntyre lays out Ziggler and probably a couple of Claymores, and yeah. Drew McIntyre is victorious. but maybe at the end of it, he's on his back via Orton, via Lashley, or via Lesnar at the end of that. That's my thinking anyway.
Agreed. I think there's. It feels like there's going to be something, and it feels most likely of those three that it would be Randy Orton. So it feels like it's going to be something.
Exactly.
We're just not sure what.
There has to be something because this is too straightforward. There has to be something with Drew McIntyre happening here. So, yes. Okay, then we get to the main event here. And here's my thing first. As I read this, I actually was not aware that this was a non-title match. And
correct.
That is what makes it the most interesting to me and changes my thinking for the outcome. So I'm going to take a breath. You go first on this one.
All right. So, fans, you're in for a treat because you have the two men on the planet that are the most opposite about The Fiend and his matches since there hasn't been a crowd. You can go back to WrestleMania and hear that. You can go back to any of his matches since then and hear our dissenting opinions on these two things. I am of two minds about this. On the one hand, I think that Bray Wyatt is getting the best out of Braun Strowman that we've gotten since Braun was just the monster that was destroying things. I think Braun felt very flat. And I said this on the NXT show, because the kind of champion you want is like an Io Shirai or an AJ Styles, somebody you can put in there with anybody. They can make them look good and convince you through a match that if they face that challenger again, there is a good chance that they will lose while still keeping heat and still coming out victorious with the title. Braun Strowman is not that kind of wrestler. It's not a bad thing. It's just a problem when you have somebody that is your universal champion that isn't a Seth Rollins. He can't go in there with everybody. He generally has to have one specific type of match. Bray Wyatt, as a person, I think is a genius in terms of the character that he's created and the way that he's made it work with so many different people. And I think that this story is tailor-made for Bray Wyatt to be in, and they've kind of gotten around Bray Wyatt losing. And it makes sense, to me at least, that whatever's going on in Bray Wyatt's head is he thinks that the Mr. Rogers version of himself could just talk to Braun and could just say, hey, come on back, we'll get through this, it's all fine, you have something of mine. Bray Wyatt cares about the title, I don't think The Fiend does. So Bray Wyatt goes back to the cult leader, and he says, I need to get inside of his head more. We're going to go back to the swamp. We're going to take you back to where you were created so that I can destroy you. This is non-title. You are correct, which is interesting because you could either have Bray Wyatt win, or you could have interference, or you could have him lose again. And then, again, I don't think that The Fiend cares at all about the title. I think The Fiend doesn't like Braun Strowman, or maybe doesn't care about him, and then he beats down Bray Wyatt, and then The Fiend comes out to finally beat Braun Strowman. So this is a very interesting match, and I don't know if a lot of people caught that it's non-title, and it shouldn't be a title match yet, because you're either going to have Bray Wyatt lose twice, which doesn't feel like a great idea. But if you're going to, Bray Wyatt can lose. That's not a problem. Bray Wyatt is kind of there to lose. The Fiend is the one who can't really lose. And so this very much feels like a setup for a SummerSlam match 1 year after we saw his entrance for the first time against Finn Balor, coming back for revenge on Braun Strowman. I don't think that The Fiend needs the title. And I'm a little bit concerned that they're going to have him be champion again, and you're going to run into the same problem of, well, who's going to beat him? But I'm absolutely a Fiend guy and a Bray Wyatt guy, and this is the most interested I have been in Braun Strowman in I don't know how long, and I'm very interested to see what they do, because there has to be a reason that this is non-title, and they're going to have this weird cinematic swamp match. Now, Matt, I feel as though I have filibustered just long enough for you to have collected yourself. So, Matt, I am going to pass the Fiend ball back into your court, my friend.
Okay. So, let me say, I think I'm going to surprise you with some of my thoughts here, because with this whole COVID era, as we all deem it, in history, in the history books of wrestling, in 3, 4, 5 years, we'll look back and probably deem this the COVID era. It has really hurt my wrestling soul to see the cinematic matches. I don't need to get into the detail. Everyone knows my thoughts on why I despise the cinematic version, particularly Money in the Bank, which was just the apex of everything I despise about Vince McMahon's vision of wrestling. I mean, it was my worst nightmare wrapped into one. Come on my screen in my living room. And so that was the worst thing that you could possibly have done. Now, with that being said, I have come around to just waving the white flag of they're going to do this every pay-per-view and probably multiple times now per pay-per-view of flexing their post-production cinematic movie muscles of what they can do next and being able to just live out their fantasy of not being a wrestling company, but being a cinematic movie wannabe Hollywood, big time promotion. I get it. So I've waved the white flag of expecting a traditional wrestling storyline in a ring. Everything is settled inside the ring, and it's a simulated sport. I am going to remove that part of my brain, because if I don't, it's going to just be a hour rant of a cussing and just explicit language that will probably turn off a lot of people. So I'm removing that. Now, with that said, this story has, I think, been very – it's probably good as it could have been. Bringing back the Swamp cult leader of Bray Wyatt was surprising, given that the very first thing that Bray Wyatt did, if you remember, the very first time we saw him as this Mr. Rogers Child's show host, evil host, he took a chainsaw and sliced his own image down, meaning that this character is dead and we're not going to see him again. So that was very symbolic of, okay, this is a brand new Bray Wyatt. They've brought this Bray Wyatt back. I'm not complaining. I like the fact that they brought it back, and now he has two other characters, because I've equated this to the three faces of Foley, where you have Dude Love, kind of the happy-go-lucky, loving Dude Love. You have Mankind, kind of the twisted version of himself, dark, kind of depressed but evil side. And then you have Cactus Jack, who is like the ultimate version of Mick Foley, that is just the hardcore legend that we remember him as, flaming tables and thumbtacks. That's Cactus Jack. Yes, we had Mankind and Hell in a Cell. I get it. But that's kind of what we have here with Bray Wyatt, the three levels of Bray Wyatt. It's kind of like the evil, sadistic, kind of disturbing co-show host of the child's show. And then you have now the Swamp Cult Leader. That's level two. And then you have now the Fiend, which we have not seen in quite a while, which I think is a good thing. Less is more with the Fiend. So with that being said, now that it's non-title, it's thrown me, because I assumed it was tied for the championship. I think there's still people out there that believe it's for the championship until I saw it in writing that it's a non-title match. It's thrown me because you don't want Bray Wyatt to lose again, but do you really want Braun Strowman to lose to the cult leader? And then what, right? If you have him lose, I don't even know how you lose. Is this via drowning? Is this via a pin? Alligator? I don't know how you lose or win. So I think it's just going to be an all-out fight, and it's kind of an impromptu last man standing without saying last man standing. Again, since it's not for the championship, I would say Bray Wyatt wins. That covers Braun Strowman for being champion and continuing to come out of this champion. So here's what I'm going to say. My final prediction with all that jibber-jabber is Bray Wyatt wins. But whatever wins means, I don't know how you win a match, because the stipulation wasn't really put forth of how you actually win.
I think it's
clear
that it's alligator, but go ahead.
Okay, so if it's fine. So we're going to have people losing eyes and being eaten by alligators.
Wrestling.
So, yeah, no, totally fine. So that's going to be probably what's going to happen, is Bray Wyatt wins, whoever that happens again. But here's the key. This program is going to continue, because Braun Strowman, probably after he loses, is not going to be truly done with Bray Wyatt. Either he gets the last laugh with Bray Wyatt, maybe throwing him into an alligator pit at the end of the show, even though he lost the match. then bringing out the Fiend. So this has to evolve somehow and point to the Fiend, because that's how we're all getting to SummerSlam. The goal is to get to SummerSlam. How do you then descend Bray Wyatt even further to get to the Fiend? You have to do something to the Bray Wyatt character that is dastardly, that would really drive him deeper into that Fiend character. So Braun Strowman loses, but in a loss brings out the Fiend that gets us to SummerSlam. And I expect this to be a very obviously cinematic, and it's probably going to be very creepy, and they're going to have snakes in the water and show all that kind of stuff. So I'm just going to enjoy it for understanding it's a cinematic version of pro wrestling, not a normal version. That may help me.
That probably will help you, especially with this one, because it's definitely going to be 100% cinematic and a departure from traditional wrestling and what it is. I think it makes sense that Bray Wyatt wins, and then Braun Strowman is not truly done with him, and maybe he tosses out Bray Wyatt, but then we see the Fiend at the last second, because we're definitely getting to SummerSlam with it, so you just need to get us to SummerSlam with it. So really, whether Braun wins or loses, it doesn't necessarily matter because it's non-title, but if cult leader Bray can pull out a win and then Braun Strowman immediately takes him out, you see the Fiend at the last second, boom, now you're not really done with Bray Wyatt, and you have to take on the Fiend at SummerSlam. So this is definitely going to be more of a chapter in a book than an entire novel. I'm excited to see it and see just what it is and how they do it. I'm excited to see the cult leader back, and I'm excited to see how we get from that to the Fiend. I think that's the most interesting part about this whole show.
I don't want to fully agree, because I still think there's a part of my wrestling soul just despises this stuff. But given the circumstances, and given that this is not going away until we get back in front of fans, I'm going to take it for what it is and try very hard to enjoy it. And my thinking as you're talking about this match too is the Fiend has to have a reason to come out. And I think Braun Strowman, if he loses, doesn't mean anything, as you said, because it's a, number one, it's a swamp fight. It's not a traditional wrestling match. And Bray Wyatt kind of needs a victory. So Bray Wyatt could say he got the win, but Braun Strowman, again, immediately does something that throws him into an alligator pit. Again, this is just my thinking. And then, apparently it looks like maybe the alligators devour him. And just when the camera pans away, you see like the Fiend's mask floating in the water, and a hand comes up and grabs it and pulls it down into the water. I mean, like something like that. Like I could see happening where, you think Bray Wyatt's maybe dead and gone, but it's kind of like a Freddy versus Jason match. That's what this is. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
They might as well just film it at Crystal Lake. I mean, like,
even better.
So, all right. Well, any final thoughts on the Extreme Rules? Do you think anything's going to happen that is, again, maybe big return? We kind of outlined that with Drew versus Ziggler. Anything that we're not thinking of that's not advertised? I mean, Randy Orton is not even on the show. He's going to be facing Big Show in an unsanctioned match on Raw, which is interesting that they did that on Raw and not the pay-per-view. But any thoughts?
I think that I don't know that we'll get a return, because I think WWE thinks like you do, where they're not going to waste a big return in front of no crowd. I think that we're going to have a very straightforward B pay-per-view. And I think it's either going to be solid undercard matches, and then the hinge is really Seth Rollins, Rey Mysterio. If that match comes out not being ridiculous and being a good match, then I think it's really going to help this pay-per-view. If it's going to be the match that we all think it's going to be, then it's going to be an okay pay-per-view with a terrible match in the middle. And then it's going to depend on how Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman goes, and if it's interesting and cinematic in a good way, and if we get something teased with the Fiend after that kind of leaves you wanting more and happy. But I think it's going to be a solid undercard. I think the wrestling is going to be very good, and I think it just depends on Ray and Seth for how this show is going to be remembered, which is an unfortunate position for them to be in, kind of handicapped like that. But I don't think we're getting anybody coming back.
Yeah, again, and I'm okay with that. I'm fine with it. I it's weird, and this is what we talked about at the beginning of the show, is taking expectations down for that those kinds of moments and returns. I'm fine with it. As much as I'm excited to see somebody return, I would at the same time after I see them go, oh, but wouldn't that be so much better in front of an audience? So I wish they canceled Austin 316 Day and just not even have done it to see, you know, that was a tragedy in and of itself. Even though Byron Saxton got stunned, loved it. But that kind of thing, yeah, please, WWE, if I know they have a SummerSlam pay-per-view to put on in 5 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever it is. At the same time, you limit things. Just kind of do a B pay-per-view. I hate to say that. I hate to ask WWE to dumb down their storylines, but I kind of want them for a delayed gratification. Like, I'm okay with that. So I'm sure they're internally conflicted given the plummeting ratings at the same time. So they're kind of between a rock and a hard place. Do we show our aces, or do we just continue the course and hope that ratings stabilize? And it's a conundrum. I do not envy WWE creative or Vince McMahon to have to make those decisions, but
yeah, not at all. But it seems like they're just, as you said, going to stay the course and try and wait this out.
Yeah, definitely. Anything else, whether it's pay-per-view or anything else in Raw or SmackDown you wanted to chat about before we close out?
I think so. I think Raw's been mostly a Randy Orton kind of show. SmackDown's been mostly an AJ Styles kind of show, and NXT's mostly a Keith Lee show now, and I think wrestling is in a pretty good place where it's gotten kind of adjusted to everything. And although I am biased because I host the show about NXT, I think NXT has maybe done the best job of adjusting after AEW, who kind of got a head start. And I think that it's pretty exciting that we have everything set up the way we do with champions. I think we're in one of the best places we've been in some time with champions, and I just hope that we can kind of continue that going forward. This show excluded, it's definitely going to be a B pay-per-view, but I hope that we can kind of carry that momentum forward and hopefully get fans back soon. That's really the hope.
Yeah, amen. I mean, please. It's obviously not up to WWE, but right. You don't even realize how much you miss the fans until they're not there. So I mean, when you go back and watch the network or YouTube clips, you're like, oh, that's so much. It's like a breath of fresh air.
Oh.
Yeah. It's just, it gives you all the feels. And, I really wonder, whenever that first Raw or SmackDown or pay-per-view back, when they have fans there, you know, what the ratings are going to be. Are people going to really come back? And there's no sports on right now anyway. There will be in a week or so with MLB coming back. But WWE has no competition right now, and the ratings are as bad as they are. Which makes you really concerned if they stay this course and they're not able to return to a live format with fans. With the NFL starting in September, just a couple of months away, how do the ratings do then? I mean, so it's not great for WWE right now in their positioning, but I applaud them for continuing and just doing the best that they can. So,
yeah.
All right, Zach. Well, I guess share your social media if you'd like, or anything else that you'd like to share, shout outs, anything.
Thank you kindly. As you have already mentioned, I am the host of the NXT Review here on the unofficial WWE podcast. You can catch me every Thursday. I'm reviewing the NXT from that past Wednesday, so you can go ahead and give that a listen from last Thursday and check it next Thursday. On Twitter, I am ZachNXT, that's ZachNXT, because I am nothing if not a marketer. So you can hit me up there, any questions about wrestling or life, or if you just want to hear something added to or taken away from the show that I do, I'm always over there. But otherwise, that's where you can find me.
Awesome. And yeah, you guys can find me on literally only Instagram, because that's it. I am now relegated to the annals of Instagram.
But what an Instagram it is.
Yeah, that's true. At least, yeah, it's at least a platform that is, you know, like number two in the world. Like
exactly.
You know, it's as big as it gets. But
you're not on Friendster or something.
No,
you're at
Friendster.
Least, you know.
Yeah, you can find us on MySpace at, yeah. I mean, like, so, all right, Zach. Well, thanks so much for coming on. Obviously, everybody, check out the NXT Review Show. It does a great job, and I've only gotten positive feedback, so that's great to hear. So, Zach, enjoy the pay-per-view. I'm sure you and I will be in touch, and we'll have to have you on maybe pre-SummerSlam to get your opinions on and preview for SummerSlam.
Absolutely. I look forward to it, Matt. Thank you very much for having me back on. Great to talk to you again on the air.
Yeah, definitely. Enjoy your night.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show. Or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to Patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.